Contenders, ready! Gladiators, ready! 3, 2, 1! The Gladiators!
Hello and welcome to another installment of the GLAD Pod with me, David Blackmore, and of course, Jimp Jet.
I didn't see that one coming, but I'll take it.
I have no idea. I had no idea what jimp meant, but apparently it means elegant, neat, and trim.
I'll take that. I didn't see that one coming. Elegant, what, neat, and...
Oh, trim.
Well, I think you see some new glasses at the moment, but anyway, thank you. I'll take that.
Well, this is another episode of GladPod. Now, it seems to be going very, very quickly, series one, to the point that I don't really know where all the time's going. But the one thing that has been coming through in its droves at the moment have been our correspondence. Now, obviously, we had Password Gate to begin with, and when producer Paul forgot the password, and then we had Spamgate, where we found loads of correspondence in our spam folder. So we're kind of catching up a little bit with that, and we've got a few more here. So Adam Wadforth, he says John Anderson and Wolf will have some stories to tell. Hope you can get them on. Loving the podcast, slow. Gladiators was a must watch TV show in the 1990s. Yes, John Anderson and Wolf are very much top of our list, both perhaps proving somewhat difficult, with John and he's you know, age and health now, and Wolf obviously being thousands of miles away does make it a little bit difficult.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, both of them would be fantastic.
We'll get there.
The thing is, with, as I'm sure everyone's been listening and probably enjoying, the clips that we get from the show from producer Paul to sort of insert at key moments throughout the podcast. And the clips of John Anderson and the clips of Wolf together, there's probably some funny ones of them two together on the show as well, but there are going to be some fantastic clips of those two throughout the show, because obviously being there for so long as well.
Yes, iconic, and part of the whole backdrop and backdrop and landscape of the whole show of Gladiators is Wolf, of course, John Anderson. We're working on it, and we will get round to both of them. Probably due for the next series, David, yes?
Yeah, I think that's probably more likely. Another gladiator we get quite a lot. So Vinny Morelli, can you get Nightshade?
I would love to. Absolutely love to.
Nightshade's come up quite a few times. So clearly a popular gladiator.
She was. And she was just a wonderful, warm member of the team. I think I may have already spoken about this. One memory I have of her. She was 6'2" in bare feet. And she would actually wear heels, huge, high, towering heels, to make herself even taller. So she'd then be a magnificent 6'7". And she said she liked to be able to wear heels that big, so she would have to stoop to walk through any doorway. She said, because she always felt really, you know, really grand when she'd then sort of straighten up on the other side and just glide through a room. She was an incredibly graceful lady inside and out.
Oh, there you go. There's another little bit of story that I didn't know beforehand. Mm. Robert Cole says, whatever happened to Shadow? That's a common theme on the messages that we get. And rest assured, again, we are trying to see if we can get that chat with him. And I think with some of the gladiators, they want to see how GladPod is coming together, and how the episodes and the response from fans. And I think there will be a time that we speak to Shadow, and there will be time that he goes, yep, do you know what? I'm happy to do it. Let's sit down and let's have a chat. And I think because of the correspondence that we're getting from you, the listeners, it's starting to help us shape our thinking when it comes to series two and who else we'd like to speak to as well. I know producer Paul's hot on the case of doing it. Another name that comes up quite a lot, Adam Davies. Get Lightning on the GladPod. I met her once when she did pantomime in Basildon years ago. She was in Dick Whittington as the female Queen Rat. Did you ever do Dick Whittington?
I did. I've been a principal boy 20 odd years. I was doing pantos, but I had a musical theatre background, and I'm a very average principal boy, but once I started playing principal boys, Jack, Dick, Aladdin, they all were there, and I liked Dick Whittington. It was always a nice one to do, and I'm sure Kim Lightning went on to do many as well. She'd been fabulous on stage because she's what we call a very gracious performer. So some people, when you share a stage with them, they don't hog it, they don't want to take over, they don't want to. She'd been very very gracious, very easy to work with, and you know what, as a friend, she's one of the most inspirational women that I've ever had chance to work with and meet, and she's become a good friend too. So we will get hold of her. Yeah, she is one of the ones who sat back and gone, oh, let me have a listen to them first and see how it goes. She's a bit cautious, which is
and understandably. Yeah, absolutely. Colin Rossiter says, would it be great if the original Gladiators returned? Just hope it's filmed at the NIA in Birmingham. Even it was just a special and we had Jet, Hunter, Warrior, Scorpio, Panther, Saracen, Lightning and Wolf. Now, there's definitely a few names on there that probably Hunter, Lightning has looked amazing on Instagram recently, and Wolf, yeah, who all probably still say that they would do it. I'm not so sure about you, Di, whether you'd still fancy it.
What are you trying to say, like?
Well, you often, every time I speak to you, there's always another ailment that you have, something else that's fallen off.
Yeah, no, exactly. Literally, things falling off. I was a bit like Kim, like Lightning. I was a gymnast before Gladiators ever, and then on the back of gymnastics from the age of 7 to 14, I went on to become a professional dancer. Now, anybody out there who's a professional performer, dancer, ex-gymnast, you will know how much wear and tear that puts through the spine and the joints of your, particularly the joints of your lower, like your knees and your ankles, hips, lower spine. And they just probably wouldn't deal very well with being flung from the top of a pyramid ever again, or dropping 15 foot off Hang Tough. So I, as a little promise to myself after my last accident and outing on GLADS, I said I would never put my body through that level of distress again. So I would do something, even if it's just cheering and supporting others, but I don't think I'd put my body through that level of risk again. Sad, but true.
And kind of on that vein, we've got two messages we had in from Stephen Ferguson. Now, the first one is that he's always been one for, there's everything for a reason. And after listening to the podcast with you, Di, he said it's definitely the case for you. Clearly, as much as you love the show and still love the show, to hear how terrified you were of the injuries and getting injured shows it wasn't in your interest to stay on the show. He goes on to say you went on to pave herself a new career with psychotherapy and went on to pursue many other avenues in life, personal milestones, etc. She could have missed out on so much of her own life had this accident not happened. So, as upsetting and shocking as it was for us fans, I'm glad she did what was best for her and for her health.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for that feedback. And yes, you're right. I had to make a decision based on my own well-being. And I was always keen on the mind and what the mind does, how the mind's developed in a conscious being like man, what we can potentially do more and better with it. And I particularly love sitting and listening to people's life stories and where their mental health is. It fascinates me. I'm not sure I'm particularly brilliant, but I create a safety enough space, as we say in the business, for somebody to really reorientate again in their lives, because sometimes we all get a bit lost.
Absolutely. And Stephen Ferguson, he also goes on to say, it's good to hear the guests being so candid and the level of humility now that there's no longer need for sort of persona or guard, and to hear the likes of Jet and Hunter talk about sort of anxieties and doubt and nerves. And I'm sure we all looked up to them as kids, thinking they were superhuman, which I know is a common thing we've had on the show, and could do anything, even when, you know, stating the obvious, they were younger people and under the intense media spotlight. And much of the same of any of us, they've had insecurities, really enjoying the series so far. And again, that's a very valid point as well.
Very. I think it's about being real, isn't it? And I think you don't get sort of 25, 26 years beyond a huge show like GLADS, when most of us would have been, what, early 20s or something, and not have a little bit of life packed under our belts somewhere with a few scars to show. And I'm quite happy to be quite candid about all the brilliant things that have happened to me. And also, I experienced 10 nearly 13 years up until just last year of living hell with a situation that was just awful, but shaped me probably more than any other experience in my life as a person, and with the wisdom and the strength that I now know that I have. So yeah, I think it's about people becoming a bit real. Not everybody has to go there, because maybe some people, it's a private space and they don't want to talk about some of the darker things. But I think everyone's done pretty well so far, David, haven't they? We're kind of going, oh yeah, this happened, that happened. Life, you know, sucks. That's what it's about. All the highs and all the lows. It would be pretty boring if it was just one flat line, hey?
Absolutely. And I think Hunter was perhaps the biggest surprise for me in terms of being so open and so candid with it, you know. Yeah. And I think him and Cobra and Rebel, I feel like there was more stories that they probably had as well. So it was just a case of just sort of unlocking that vault and dipping in for this first Glad Pod. And I'm sure, you know, in future episodes, future series, when we get back there, we'll get more stories.
Definitely.
One name that has come up, or not necessarily name, but one kind of guest that has come up quite a few times in our mailbox and social media has been to get a contender on, like a champion contender or a contender.
Oh, definitely.
And this is why this podcast is one that I'm really looking forward to. We have not only just a contender, but the original first champion male contender. And for me, that was the first contender that I was cheering on, somebody that I was looking up to as well. So for me, it was quite an emotional interview for me to actually be able to do it, to sit down and to have the chat with him. And I thought it was a really good chat with him. So
yes,
contenders are definitely the key for us, I think, because I think, like we've said throughout, as much as the show was called Gladiators, the gladiators still had to chase someone.
That's right. The contenders for me made every single show. They were the true stars of the show. I couldn't have done it. I could not have been a contender. I just about managed to be a gladiator. But the contender, they had to do everything. Yes, they'd have had strengths and weaknesses, but ultimately the contenders had to go out there on whatever event the show had decided to produce for that episode, whether it was a, you know, a heat or a quarter or a semi-final or a final, and they just had to be across the whole, I was going to say across the board, across the arena, more apt. They were brilliant.
So this one is a particularly special one for me. Weininger Owen is going to be the first contender that we hear from. Woo! And it would be great to hear from you guys as to which other contenders that you would like to hear from. So
yes,
as always, get in touch, thegladpod@gmail.com.
And at thegladpod on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I can immediately say Roddy and Eunice, those two contenders that we have got to get on our Gladpod. And I can't wait.
3, 2, 1.
So this week's show features the one and only first ever male contender champion, Weininger. Welcome.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And it's great just catching up after so many years.
When we were going through the list in the first series of the people you wanted to speak to, for me, I said, well, we need to get the first champions and contender champions in, because it's not just the gladiators wouldn't be gladiators without the contenders. And for me, that first series, you were the champion. I wanted to be you. I was trying to copy you in the living rooms, you know, because I would never be a gladiator because, you know, they're superhuman, but I could at least try and aspire to be like you. So, you know, this
isn't
is great.
Lovely.
For me.
I didn't know that you felt that's a really good way of thinking about it, isn't it? What is it like to hear that?
It's like, wow. It's like, inspirational, because, you know, for us, it was the opportunity to be on this game show. And but more than a game show, a sporting TV phenomenon.
Absolutely.
In regards to what it brought to the viewers of the 90s. Hearing that's taken me to another level, because I would have never have thought that I would have inspired you to maybe, I just thought the show was called Gladiators, not Contenders, but as you say, the Contenders were regular members of the public, which, you know, it was basically just trying to, you know, see how well they could do against the Gladiators, you know.
Now it's time for a real clash of the titans. Please give a very warm welcome to our first male contender. He is Weininger Owen.
Thank you.
Listen, with a name like Weininger, I'm delighted to find somebody else with a bizarre name. Where did yours come from?
Well, as a matter of fact, at the time of my birth, my father was reading a book by a German author, and his last name happened to be Weininger. So he said, yes, that's the name of my son. So he named me Weininger, so...
That's terrific. I won't tell you the secret behind my name. Listen, best of luck. I'm sure everyone will get to know your name by the end of the programme. Off to your atmosphere!
And I guess for me, and I think you'll probably agree with this, but especially with being original Gladiator, is that that first series, you probably didn't know what you were signing yourselves up for.
Not at all, because it was just amazing. And I mean, you say that, but when I received notification that I was one of the...
Did you apply? How did you hear? Yeah, was it the newspaper advert or?
Okay, all right. Okay, now we're going back. All right. Okay. I literally just come back from America because basically I'm from the UK. I was born in Hackney, a place called Hackney Hospital, Homerton. I spent my first 16 years here, went to primary, secondary. Then after that, 16 years of age, my father said, "Oh, let's go to the US. I spent 14 years out there.
Was that just like a blind decision, or did you have family out there, or did he thought you'd have better opportunities, or what?
My better opportunities for himself, for me at 16, I didn't see really much anything going on here in the UK, and it sounded quite exciting just going to the US.
Yeah.
Just flying out there. I didn't know what to expect, but it just seemed a lot better than what was put in front of me at 16.
And their athletic culture as well has always been, I think, a little bit more across the board, hasn't it? Which was what I'm getting at, is it might have started setting you up already to be what you eventually were to become for the show.
Interesting that you say that, because once going to America and going to high school, one of the things that I got into was track and field. Mm-hmm. And basically the whole training ethos, the whole what you call circuit, was just phenomenal in regards to opportunities presented in going and basically running against different states, different boroughs. I mean, you know, some of the things that I think about now, you know, I did cross country, and we did, it was called the Queensborough Championships, and we had like about 350 runners in that. And I remember that because I did that, and basically I came top 20. So that for me was mad achievement. But it also just shows you in regards to what opportunities, in regards to athletics and things like that. Yeah. But some of the things that you could get into, really.
So then how'd you come back to the UK when you applied for Gladiator? Or had you seen the American version then? Is that what you...
No, I'd watched the American version time and time again. And when I came back, they used to put it on late night.
Friday nights.
And I used to always watch, and I was like, you know, always thinking about it and things like that. But coming back to your original question, how did I hear about it? I happened to be watching TV in the afternoon, and there was this ad on the TV. So just basically...
What does that ad say?
It's just basically ITV launching a new series. We're looking for possible contenders and then things like that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I looked at it and I was like, wow. But
did you know then it would be Gladiators?
I knew that they... As soon as I saw Gladiators, I was like, I'm up for it. But however, there was a newspaper called The Voice newspaper.
Yes.
And probably about 2-3 weeks later, I saw an ad in that newspaper also. But I already had called up the number that I saw on ITV. And I already, you know, for me, they said that they were auditioning at a local leisure centre or whatever it may be. And then that was the beginning of the journey.
There's Weininger's stats. He spent 12 years in New York, where he used to watch the American Gladiators twice a day.
I only have one thing to say to the Gladiators. Remember David and Goliath. I'm a little bigger than David, so watch out.
And then what happens then? You said you get notification that, what, you can go to a contender tryout.
Notification, contender tryout. And I'm going to tell you something that, you know, I think it would be interesting, and even interesting to yourself. So yeah, got the letter saying that, or letter, I can't remember the actual correspondence, but it was just said that local leisure centre needed to be there at 9 o'clock, or 9 or 10 o'clock or whatsoever. And basically you would go through a series of physical challenges. And if you were successful, then you would go on then to speak or talk to, you know, like an associate producers or, or whatsoever. So what happened is that they had a time limit that you had to finish those physical challenges within a certain time limit.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, I did that. And the last one was the treadmill. Now, okay, may not believe me, but until that time, even as a runner, I had never been on a treadmill.
Oh, no.
Honestly, I'd never
it's
been on
a... It's quite an art to it, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. However, so what happens? So what happens? And let me just say, you know, the crazy thing is, yeah, what happens is, so I've gone through everything, jumped on a treadmill, and I'm just jogging on the treadmill. And I'm like, this is easy, because I'm thinking the treadmill, you power it yourself. So, you know, like you're moving it rather than pressing buttons or whatsoever.
Oh, no.
And the person that was looking after that segment was Nigel Lithgow's son.
Oh,
I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Producer Paul.
Okay. But it was his son. So what happens? I finished in a time, I think it was like 9:15, 9:20 or whatsoever. And the cap that they had was 9 minutes. So Nigel Lithgow actually comes over to me and he says, sorry, not good enough.
No.
Yeah.
So I'm there, you know, shell-shocked. I'm like, I'm fit, you know. So after that initial shock, what I do is I go and I went back and I found Nigel and I said, listen, this is no word of a lie. I have never, ever used a treadmill. And it's not like the individual said that this thing could speed up or whatsoever, blah, 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 blah. Da, 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 da. Nothing was said.
Of course, you'd have had to take time to go do.
Well, he actually said it and then he just put it on. I was like, and then what's mad, if you go into the first series of
in
Gladiators, you will see me, I'm overstriding on the treadmill because I'm like, this is easy. Yeah, you know, this is easy. So he looks at me. And he was like, yeah. But he then looks at me and he says, and I kind of indicate that I'd like to have another go. And he says, all right, come back in 2 hours. I come back in 2 hours. And now knowing that you can speed up the treadmill, I finished in a time of 7:24.
There you go.
So it tells you.
It just
tells you. And for me and to anyone that's listening to the podcast, all I'll say is that never be afraid to ask the question.
Yeah, because there'll be lots of people that...
Because I could have went away in this setting, what we're in there.
You would never be.
You would never, you know. So, yeah. And to be fair to Nigel, thank you, mate, if you're listening. I'm not saying, I know you got other things to do, but you know what I mean? Thank you for but I think he knew because it was his son that was doing it and he maybe, you know, he didn't give me the information or whatsoever, but I proved that I more than had the ability.
Great entrance there, Weininger. Welcome.
How are you?
You've changed your hairstyle. It's fabulous.
Thank you very much.
Tonight it's really serious stuff. Of course, at stake we have the men's title. So what would it mean to you if you won?
I would compare my feeling to one of the athletes that have just received the gold medal. I would feel it in that manner.
Well, you might not win a gold medal, but you stand the potential of winning £5,000. What would you do with the money?
Well, basically, I would invest it into future endeavours, in video editing and so forth. And one day, I will be the best video editor in London.
That is terrific. Isn't that terrific? Very confident. Very confident indeed, but also very, very sensible. Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to wish you the very, very best of luck.
The contender and the gladiator tryouts, were they similar or were the gladiators one more intense?
I think they were winging it, really. For that whole first season, no one had done anything like this. I don't know how much they'd transposed the American model over in terms of how they then selected their contenders as opposed to gladiators. We had a series of gym tests, which were all filmed, and then we were put on the Woolwich Barracks Army Assault Course, and that was it. We didn't do the treadmills or the chin-ups and things. I mean, I personally, at the time, would have struggled more more with what you guys were asked to do than what we were put through. I'd not long come out of training as a gymnast and then the dancers, so I'd kept loading my skills and athleticism. But when I found out what you guys had to do over the years, I was like, that's tough, really tough. But I guess I think it's basically like a bit of, not like a, you know, it's like a conveyor belt of going, next. They had to kind of do something that was more literally methodical rather than having a big group thing all for one day, because it would have taken too much time. So there were so many people applying after the first year, and you set the bar.
Every other male champion after that would have been compared to yourself, because you were the first person to do it. So this is what I'm saying, people.
No, absolute pleasure. I mean, I can't say anything more than that. And you know,
And after the tryouts, then you, is it just a waiting game then until you get a letter through the post to say you're in?
Well, it wasn't because it wasn't just because, okay, you had the tryouts, then you had to then do a pugil stick sort of thing, how well you could. So basically you and another prospective contender, so to speak, you had the pugil sticks, and Nigel was he's very hands-on. I'll say that.
Nigel, he got involved, didn't he?
No, he was very, very hands-on, so he did, he'd peer you up, then you would just like go for it. I can't remember, maybe 30 seconds, you'd go bash the hell out of each other, you know, and they watched how well your skills were using the pugil sticks. And then after that, then they asked for you to do video interview. Okay. So it wasn't based on just physical attributes and what it was the fact that you had the physical attributes and that you could also come across on camera.
Right, yes.
Because the last thing that they wanted was a physical specimen, and then on camera,
one-word answers.
How do you feel about that? It's all right. You know, they wanted a little bit more. Yeah. So that's the reason why they had that particular segment. And then it was a wait. And I remember clearly I was at home and the phone rang, and it was actually Mia. Mm-hmm. And she said that you've made the cut to be one of the contenders for Gladiators. And if you remember the first season, which is really important, they were oversubscribed as far as contenders. So it wasn't, you had to still prove yourself when you actually got on set.
That's right.
Remember the very first show, they filmed with the four contenders that were never ever going to appear on the show, because whilst you were filming, they were looking at attitude. And I know for a fact that one of them, she had everything, but what she did, she swore on set a couple of times.
Okay.
She had what it took as far as I was concerned, but I know it was that. And you know, because when you're on set and behind the scenes and all that stuff, you get to hear and see everything, really. And I know because of her swearing, that's the reason why she didn't make.
But that's one thing that really, going back to that little bit of screen test that you did beyond the physical, you know, proving yourself as an athlete. It was your congeniality. There was such an ease about you, and I don't know why, but it just, you bought an air of, there was no arrogance, which I know some other contenders had to kind of barricade themselves slightly with, to almost to bounce off some of the gladiators as well, because they'd be wound up. But you just had such, you were like butter, you're like a knife through warm butter in terms of your attitude.
So Weininger runs into this shootout at the Gladiator Corral. In his heat, he scored a 10. In his semi, he picked up 2, so not a bad record for the videotape editor from London. Scores 1 by firing the crossbow. Onto the bazooka now, one of the more accurate weapons. Oh, and doesn't he take advantage? A direct hit, 10 points. You're going to finish it quick, and that's just what Weininger did. Warrior with nothing better to do than just hang around. I'll bet he's glad to get the weight off that leg. And don't the Weininger supporters love it? 10 points for a job well done.
But what was going on inside it whenever, you know, you started going into the arena? Because we'll start getting to the point now where you're moving nearer and nearer towards knowing you got the gig and you're on your way up to Birmingham. What's going on for you?
All right. Now, here's is another thing. So got the call, got the letter saying that. I even remember the hotel, Copthorne, I think it was. Hotel or whatever. But I was, let me tell you something. Is there such a thing as overexcited? I was like, so overexcited. Let me explain. I actually took the train. They said that you needed to be there at 3 p.m. I actually got there about 11. Yeah, so I was actually in Birmingham and I was like, well, they said, even when I got to the hotel, you're too early, you can't check in.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, could I at least leave my stuff? And then, you know, they was like, oh, okay. So what I did, I actually went to the National Indoor Arena.
You didn't?
Yes, I did. And here's the thing, yeah? So like, yeah, you're getting nuggets now, yeah?
Yeah.
All right? So I actually went there and went, I was like, so obviously it was all closed up. So I went down the side. Yeah. So I went to the side and then, you know, I met with a scene of like, they had like the lights and...
All the riggers going in, was it?
Well, it wasn't even the riggers. It was the setting or the scene was that it was like smoke, light, and I saw a specimen of a man. Shadow. Oh. I actually saw a shadow. And I...
Got the first glimpse of Shadow.
Yeah, I got the first glimpse. But also, I saw Shadow and Nigel with the stick, and he was like doing that and like block, hit, block. So
brilliant.
I'm there looking and I'm like, all right, that's all right, this is all right. So I then walk in and he's like, well, who are you?
You should have come up with your own name and be like, yeah, hi.
No, because it was just, you know, it's behind. Obviously, they're doing behind this thing because for the first show,
we were already in, weren't we?
Yeah, but they deliberately kept the contenders away from the gladiators. That's to keep right. That kind of
mystique.
Yeah, but here's me walking in, you know, Charlie Blocks. Yeah, so I'm like, yeah, I'm whining. I'm one of the contenders. It's like, well, how did you get in? I said, I just walked around the side. He said, you're not supposed to be here. And he escorted me. So for me, I had to look at this man, you know, this. And
yeah, and he's almost like the ultimate gladiator.
Well, he is. He, no two ways about it. I don't care. Number one, ultimate sort of predator gladiator with Shadow.
Yeah.
End the story. And you know, if you put them all together, he just had that, even on you know, in the duel and actually looking at his eyes, it was menacing.
I want to have a chance to hit Shadow instead of him hitting me, you know. I want to have a chance. I mean, he's good at, you know, I give credit where credit is due, and he's definitely good at what he does, obliterating individuals.
Oh, Shadow doesn't stand on ceremony, straight down to business, working upstairs and downstairs. A tremendous strike rate for a heavyweight. Wayne giving a much better account of himself this time, making some aggressive moves himself. Shadow puts in a roundhouse. 1, 2, 3. Weininger stays a distance. Not only will it be a miracle, he'll pick up 5 points. How does he stay up there? Are his shoes glued? Oh, look at that. Oh, and you two could look like that. Anyone got a chin opener to get that helmet off? Shadow steps across. Let's face it, it takes a special kind of contender to withstand an onslaught like that.
It was menacing. It was
the red blood vessel.
It was absolutely. You're looking at it.
It did. He used to make noises. Yeah.
And you're like, hold on. You know, it's a game show. It's not really that deep. John Anderson, 3-2 whistle, and he just went for you.
Gone.
You know, so you know, as you said in regards to coming down there, that was my first interaction. Yeah, with Nigel and also Shadow. So I had the opportunity to actually meet Shadow before any of the other contenders.
That's wonderful. That is a gorgeous... I'll take that with me as well, remember that. Because I obviously, he was formidable, but there's you. And he'd have had that first chance. And oh, Nigel going, who are you?
Well, brilliant. He escorted me out. He was like... Because he couldn't... Because it was almost like... And he's supposed to have security, but there was no one. It was only Nigel and Shadow that were there
at the time. Did you go back then to Contender Camp when everybody else started arriving and go, you got to watch for this guy?
No, I didn't. No, I just kept
if all the gladiators are like this one.
I didn't say anything. I just kept it to myself because I obviously I wasn't supposed to be there. That's one. And two, you know, there was no security. There was none. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just literally walked around the side and just, but that's how eager I was. Yeah. That's how excited I was. I was like, yeah, you know.
Weiningen, I know you're looking forward to this event.
Yes, I am. Since his name is Shadow, I only want him to hit my shadow.
What was the rapport like between the contenders? Because, like, with the gladiators, it's like one family, you're all there to kind of be gladiators. But the contenders, as the point is that you want to be the last one standing. You want to be the one that gets up that travelator and through at the end. Was it kind of jokey, or are you eyeing each up, Gup, thinking, I reckon I could get enough more points in him?
Is he going to be good?
You know what? Obviously, you like, when we all got together, you size up your... You know, your opposition, and you say, he looks good, he looks the part, and things like that. But one of the things I do remember clearly, even with that initial sizing up, when it came to the games, because I remember all of this was just brand new to all of us. You kind of more summed up your opposition then, because you just looked, some people just didn't have a clue. Mm-hmm. Some people were fantastic, you know, like, and I will say this categorically, and, you know, look at that camera there, and I'm going to say this, yeah. On swing shot, I was crap. Yeah.
A confident Chris. Now, Weiningen did well last time in this event, picking up 6 points. And, of course, he had something to say on the subject.
When I jumped off and jumped up, I felt great. I didn't do so well in practice. It looks like everything just came together and I was really enjoying it. And again, Wolfman was to the right, but nah, he was no problem, not at all.
And let me just explain what I mean by that, yeah? Jumping off the platform, I couldn't bounce up to get the balls. Every time I went, it was like you had to go like a step-step. That step would take you up.
Did you not get tangled in your when you're one?
I got tangled, but I'm talking about initially when we had to, because we had to work out the mechanics. And I had two practices before the actual live show, and on both practices, no go. Only time I got it when I was actually on the show.
Honestly, I've said to you as well, you guys just had such little exposure time to getting you rigging right, because obviously it was about the torsion of an event like that. Like going on a bungee, you've got to get the right torsion for your body weight and what it's being asked of you. And I just felt so sorry for you guys. I mean, it was all new to us, but I remember for me, as the years went on, I would always feel incredibly sorry for any contender, knowing you'd have so much less exposure time to technically really difficult things. Like if you're doing track and field, you know exactly what to do and how your body's got to work around if you're using a pole for pole vault. But this is so fresh and new. So actually, when you first did it, was with the cameras rolling in the heats.
When
first did it properly for you?
When we first did it properly, obviously, is when they were filming for the show, because, and when I say filming for the show, that's when they allowed the audience in and things like that. Yeah. But prior to that was everybody got kind of like the same practice time. So there was no unfairness there. It's just how well you adapted to the different events, really. Mm-hmm. And as I said, and I'll say it again, I didn't get it until actually being on the show.
Yeah.
When the camera started to rolling, what you saw me jumping, I don't know what it, I was like, my first one, I was like, oh, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were brilliant. Yeah.
I actually got it. So, but in practice, I was cack.
That's awful. It really
it knocks your confidence,
doesn't it? Because
I actually feared that one, because I was like, more the same, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Next up, it's the men who'll swing their thing. Weininger up against his old adversary, the wolf. And the message is in the music.
Can you remember all the different events you did through to becoming champion? Did you do all of them? Would you have done all of them?
Okay, what you have to realise is within the first show, And this is one I think was one of the critiques, where it was all the same games.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why they had to start to change it up.
Yeah.
So really, a swing shot.
And the shooting one, yeah.
Danger zone.
Hang tough. Well, swing shot, I said already.
Said the wall.
And duel. And the wall.
Yeah.
So really, they were the only games.
Atmosphere?
Atmosphere. And I need to say something about Atmosphere, all right? And you can see it to this very day, yeah? Atmosphere. One of my skills in Atmosphere was the backward movement.
Oh.
So all the contenders, yeah?
Yeah.
But once you come together, by turning, the gladiator will know what direction you're going in. All I did was just backpedaled, got the movement first, then switched. So that because by moving backwards, I'm like, well, he's not going to know where I'm going.
And all you needed to do was turn rather than the...
Exactly.
Yeah, brilliant.
And then rather than... And that, for me, I know I probably was the only contender that was throwing it into reverse, so to speak, because it just seemed like a no-brainer.
Look at Wininger. He's throwing it into reverse. A little spin and showing great agility as he accelerates over pod one and picks up the first goal. 3 points.
Love listening to you, because I know that I'm not the most intelligent person, but I try and work, you think through events. If you haven't got the time to, it's some of it's logical or instinctive, and not every athlete has that. So it's really nice to kind of hear that that's how you did it. When you first got into an Atlasphere, though, were you surprised at its weight? Because they were huge, heavy things.
And very heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think for me, in practice, I just looked at things that made sense. And this, as I said, this turning and, you know, because we had focus mitts, which obviously, so our hands wouldn't get caught in the metal grill sort of thing.
Cheese grater, didn't
we? Cheese grater, there you go. That's exactly.
Did you ever fall over in one?
Never.
Great.
Never. I mean, you know, it's almost like me saying, with Shadow, never ever got knocked off by Shadow on the duel, because my center, my balance is pretty good. Mm. You know, center of gravity is pretty good. And that was down to, I used to live in in my flats, they had these little mental fences, and a sort of rites of passage was to actually walk all the way around. And I could do that going that way backwards. I used to spin on it. That's how good my balance was. So when it came to
like the Parker.
Yeah, well, when it came to the duel, in the second show, he knocked the stick out of my hand, but I was never ever knocked off the platform, because my center of gravity was pretty good.
Well, next up, it's the men's duel, and first on the pugil platform, it's Wininger, and guess what? He had something to say.
Shadow, for the most part, is undefeated. All right, I actually drew with Shadow. This time, I'm going for a win. No one in my eyes is invincible. And if there's any man that can take Shadow out, I'm the man.
That sounds like wishful thinking. I'm sure Shadow's intent on making him eat those words. And no doubt he'll be serving them up hot, sweet and strong with his pugil stick. Nobody in their right mind would want to change places with Wininger now. Oh, look at that. That's a good bit of advice. Wininger giving away 3 inches in height, 6 stone in weight, and Shadow an awesome and imposing figure. 58 inches of chest, 23 inches of bicep. 5 wins, undefeated, and intends keeping it that way.
3, 2, 1!
Straight down to business! Look at that, Shadow, a contender's worst nightmare. Can he stay up? I doubt it very much. He's broken his stick on him. Oh boy, he can't take any more. It's over. He's dropped the stick, and I don't blame him. Shadow's broken his pugil stick on Wininger's head, and Wininger's had enough. He's out of there. That must have been the longest 20 seconds of Wininger's life. It was all one-way traffic. The Shadow is just like hammering a nail into the ground. Look at those blows.
Wininger, it must be very intimidating standing so close to Shadow with a pugil stick in his hand.
Yeah, it was all right, you know. It wasn't too bad. Believe you me.
Really?
Really. He looks like a big guy out there, but the blows he was giving me, I didn't even feel it.
So for you, what was your best game, the best event for you?
The game that for me, that gave me, like, which was, you know, Money in the Bank was the wall.
Yeah.
Whining is nearly there. Got to get your feet over. They hit the summit simultaneously, earning a maximum 10 points each and leaving Wolf and the Hawk behind. Jeremy ecstatic.
Yeah. Weininger, congratulations, that was a close one.
I got one message to the Wolfman. I'm not Red Riding Hood, and I'm not scared of the big bad wolf.
Weininger, thank you very much. Whoa, that is a direct challenge. That is a challenge to the Wolfman.
You knew he was going to get maximum.
Yes, I'd say that. Because it was, and I remember in practice, and I remember with John Anderson, because like what we would obviously get the practice on the wall. But I remember one of the, so obviously they didn't use the gladiators. It was two of the contenders and two contenders being gladiators chasing the contenders that was in front of us. So going up the wall, I was like makeshift gladiator, but I actually caught up to my person. But what I did, I just, because for me, it wasn't a thing climbing or anything like that. I didn't pull him down. I just said, go on, you can do it. And he got up. And I remember John Anderson, after I'd done that, he came up to me and he just said, well done. Mm-hmm. He said, well done in regards to giving him, rather than knocking his confidence by pulling off. Fabulous. You gave him that.
Well, that's you, isn't it? That's you. I've spent a little bit of time with you now from all those years ago.
Yeah, 19, that's, long time. Yeah,
yeah. That's how you're put together as a person. And Hang Tough, because that was my favourite of him. How did you take to that?
No.
No, that was the one.
No.
Was that?
And let me explain with Hang Tough. Mike or Saracen, wherever you are, on my preliminaries, on my semis, he did the business on me. Yeah. And also he's in, like, because I think I actually got a shoulder. I can't remember. I think my shoulder was, because I tried to hang on whilst he was, you know, but
yeah, that's right.
I realized that wasn't the one, but I think I actually, you know, done my shoulder, but I wasn't good at the Hang Tough. I understood the maneuver and things like that.
Good start by Weininger. He's got a blue. He's halfway there. Searching for another ring. Look at that! Out of nowhere, Saracen's got him. Takes him down. Another one bites the dust.
It's only till I got to the final that I understood it a bit more, the movement.
In theory, that's probably only like the fourth time you've done it.
Exactly.
But that is just it, because again, you know, people don't realise, because obviously you watch it on a week-to-week basis and you think like, okay, you're getting better as the week go on. No.
It was, you get better the 2 days later.
Yeah, exactly. exactly that. So
was that the most challenging part for you? Challenging part of being a contender and an event?
When I think about it, Hang Tough 100% was for me the most challenging.
So exposed as well, aren't you, for such a long period?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you have to think about the just even doing something like Hang Tough and seeing all the rings and being able to, because as a gymnast, I guess you probably like, this is like a walk in the park, the swinging.
It was fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
Still nerve-wracking, but fun.
You know what I did? Mm. Yeah, for the finals, what I did, because you have those gymnastic.
The hand guards. I couldn't use them.
But
the rings would cut your hands. You couldn't. But you have to learn how to use them. That was the thing. You did none.
Well, no. But what I did for the finals, I didn't use those. I taped up the joints of my fingers.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. So if you look, you won't see. You won't. Because I just couldn't get this three thing. It wasn't. So by doing that, there was more purchase. I could maneuver a lot better as opposed to using, as you say, those hand guards. So.
Well, Weininger going to have to dig deep and then some. Last time out on Hang Tough, he came down. So not really a great track record so far. Saracen, on the other hand, an amazing account on Hang Tough. Look at the guy's speed. He loves his event. Look at that, he's halfway across. Amazing, in just 20 seconds, he's got you, he's coming down.
What was it like to win, to be the first male champion?
It's interesting because what I will say is that you asked me that question, but That question was asked to me on, I did a program called Back in Time for Brixton.
On BBC Two?
On BBC Two. Mm. And they actually used the finals that I was in as part of the show. And one of the questions were, what was it like to win? And it's a feeling that will never leave you. And especially because, we're part of a phenomenon, so to speak, in regards to this show that still captures a level of imagination until this very day.
Threshold of what could possibly be the biggest challenge of your life. What's going through your mind?
Well, to be honest with you, confidence. Whatever endeavor I take, whether it be the gladiators or any aspect of my life, I'm always confident. I always take it with a positive instead of a negative, so I'm very, very confident right now.
Whining, you can see him out of the corner of his eye as he approaches his run up to the travelator, and nothing is going to stop this man. He's up, waves to the family, grabs a rope through the paper burst. Oh, his father proudly applauding him in the audience.
So when people ask me, how was it? I think back and I'm like, I kind of broke the rules in regards to, I was so elated, I called my parents down. That wasn't done, yeah? Because if you notice, Vanda Fairchild, the other women's champion, she actually went up into the stands. But I was like, no, come share the moment. Mm. I wanted my family to be part of this, especially my mother.
Well done. How do you feel?
I feel great, but even more so. All right, this was a very, very big challenge. And for all the kids, the parents, no matter what in life, always take a positive attitude. It will get you through.
You must be incredibly proud.
I'm very proud of my one and only son. Very, very proud.
And what about daddy?
Yes, proud of him.
Not only that, I must say, my mom is an inspiration to me. Every morning before she goes to work, she jumps on her fitness bike, and that's inspirational to me, very much so.
She could be a future contender, who knows?
For me, she inspired me in regards to, if I didn't feel like going out training or whatsoever, she had this little sort of bike that she would just jump on each morning or whatsoever. And I'm like, well, she can do that, surely. So when you asked me the question, how was it? It was one where I was super excited, but I said something which I remember to this day. I said, it's a super challenge, but for all the children that are watching, I said, no matter what in life, always have a positive attitude. And the things that I do now, the fact that I've developed, let's say, my own sport, and just the fact that I've worked with the London Youth Games for over 20 plus years, just the fact that a lot of my work is done within schools and motivating and inspiring the youngsters, just the fact that I've got my own athletics club. The words I said there are still pretty much what I live by today. So when you ask the question, how did it feel? It was fantastic, but it wasn't just about me. I understood the winning of an iconic show. It was great, but it was never about me. And that is shown all times when you actually watch just the last, when I actually won. It wasn't about me. I brought my parents down. I stated to my mother, how in regards to that she inspired me. And even in my moment of where I should have been like me, it wasn't really about me. It was about for me, I just looked at that win as, how do I inspire? How do I connect? I could have quite easily, but it so when you say how did it feel, fantastic, but I also wanted to share that moment with those that actually helped me get there.
Weininger, you attacked it with tremendous aggression, but I suppose that's what got you here.
Definitely. Determination, a lot of stamina, and a lot of strength.
Is anyone here in the audience supporting you tonight?
Well, my mother's here tonight, and I'd like to send out some greetings to my mother. Thank you. She's my own personal gladiator.
The other thing as well is, we speak to the gladiators quite a bit about, after each event, having to try and come up with something to say to John, to Fash, or to Ulrika. How did you think Did you think of anything before each event? Like, right, after this, if I win this one, I'm going to be like, Saracen, you suck, or something like that.
Okay, let me tell you something, yeah? And I'm going to say it on the podcast, yeah? And I'm going to tell you like this, all right? If you watch Gladiators, you watch any of my shows, and when I came down, and I, you know, you won't be able to see what I'm doing right now, but before we did, let's say, the show, we had to meet with John Fashanu and Orica. Yep. So they kind of just to get to know them and things
okay,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
But one of the things John said, he said, okay, Weininger. He said, you know, I like you. So I'm going to just tell you something. When you come out, do something that people are going to remember you by. All right. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, just, you know, just come up with something. Yep. So to answer your question. So what I did, yeah, my thing was this. Yeah. Maybe it was too much, but maybe it gave too much of how well I was going to do in the show. But I would do this. I would go this, and I'd go like that. Yep. But if you notice with me, they always cut that out. So you only saw the shot of me coming to the entrance, so to speak, or the exit, whatever you want to call it. And then you always saw me walking down the stairs. And I think, you know, what he was saying, do something so that people can remember you by. So that was my little thing. And then if you notice after the years, people did quirky things and they kept that in. But I think maybe, you know, Weininger was... Maybe, I don't
probably
know.
Probably just enough on the walk, but it's just all in the edit, isn't it? A lot of the times
absolutely.
Well, you know, I just thought it was, you know, for me, every single time, because that's what, you know, I didn't, as a contender, I didn't know, you know, what, but the little advice he said, just
that
do something.
Nice advice, though, yeah, as well. Yeah, absolutely right.
Absolutely.
I remember it.
And let's hear what Weininger has to say about his old adversary.
I don't know, I've got this thing about Wolf. Yeah, it's really got me upset from the last show, and I've got this thing, and I have to say again, Wolfman, watch out.
Well, Wolf has been sharpening his claws, especially for this confrontation, and he's not exactly famous for his diplomacy. And Weininger, standing his ground.
Get on this.
Oh, well done, John. What a brave man. Well, Wolf, this isn't World Federation Wrestling, but with these stats, he could give Hulk Hogan a run for his money.
Wolf is coming up on Weininger. This is a real grudge match. Don't forget, Weininger must maintain contact with the wall, but he's got plenty of time to get to the top. Wolf closing in on him. But Weininger's made it. 10 points. He's got to the top, and I think we can forgive him for being a little over the top.
Weininger, that's the one you wanted.
That's the one I wanted. My message to Wolf, when I was very young, I read The Three Little Pigs, and I'm still upset at him for what he did to The Three Little Pigs.
Tell us a little bit more about what it brought to your life then, in terms of, yes, you've gone on to, you've built up your youth league, youth athletics. Just tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now.
Okay, right now I'm a sports club manager along with my wife. It's a place in Redbridge, Ilford Sports Club.
Yeah.
And we've run that for about 5-6 years now. Yeah. And we have two football teams.
Wow.
We have an athletics team. We have a number of martial arts teams, and we do a variety of classes for the community. I will make mention, I do something called Reggae Salsa.
Yeah!
And if I may just say, it's Jet or Diane Udell, may I just say this? I remember, because we had, after we, you know, we won, we had like a little party, and I remember dancing with you.
Oh.
And I remember this athletic, dynamic... crazy move, just like, you know, I had moves, but you were just like destroying me. I was like, yeah, well, I said I met my match up in here, you know? it's like, but it was like, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, but coming back to your question, so I do soul line dancing. My wife, she does something called soca aerobics, which is calypso aerobics.
It's
kind of like a Zumba, kind of thing. But my thing is, as I made the statement, yeah, to the youth and the youngsters, yeah, I'm still very much involved with the community. Yeah. Anyone that knows me, yeah, I still run a number of what I call gladiator fitness classes. Mm. So we still do a lot of upper body stuff. We do the. I've got my own little mini version of Hang Tough.
Amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd love to come along and I get myself, because I dance still. Dance is my antidepressant. It is. Dance is joy. Dance is life. Music, dance.
Listen,
you know that. I'm going to come along.
The invitation is absolutely absolutely there. That's one.
I'm going to gate crash.
Absolutely.
Get that woman away from me.
Wining has got a blue ring, so he's in the scoring zone. Look how he keeps his legs up. Defending the Saracen, keeping that bay. 5 points have got to be in the bag. He tries an arm. No, time's going to be up. 5 points. Oh, he's on cloud nine. Delighted with that.
If you could go back, if we could press a button right now and go right back there, would you do it again? I think I know what your answer's going to be.
There's only one answer, yeah? And
would you do anything differently?
I you know what? No, because it just all worked out. And, you know, the one thing I'll say is that moment. And I'll say to anyone listening at this particular time, don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, yeah. It all goes back to that one moment, doesn't it?
Because all of what's happening
now. Everything you just spoke about, all the bits you're involved in would not have happened if you have.
If you just, so my thing to anyone, don't be, you know, they say that the silly question is the one that's not asked.
Yeah.
Yep. Just ask. And
well, I've got another question.
Yeah, by all means.
Should Gladiators return? So you just said if you don't ask the question, it's coming up to the 30th anniversary. There has been a revival.
That's a great question. I personally think there's it has its place, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't. But what it is, you know, with the right of other shows that are out there, and I'll say one in particular, Ninja Warrior, and I think. It's all about the appetite of the public. I just think the magic. You know, when you have something, there's just a magic and a time. And I just when I think about, let's say, Gladiators, the first show, and then Gladiators, the Sky Show. When something works, there's a chemistry. And, you know, I looked at Gladiators, you know, the sky, and I was like, okay, yeah, it's all right. But there was a magic. Mm-hmm. There was a magic about the first show. So to answer your question, should it come back? I think on a nostalgic, yes. But with TV ratings and things like that, would it still hold on? And yeah. Capture the generation of now. I'm not too sure. I'd love to see it because I just love any activity that's going to engage. Yeah. So I'm watching the world's strongest man. I mean, I watch a lot of MMA now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I still love my athletics. Yeah. So anything that has that sporting element, and then also the trash talk. You know, it's all great.
There's one thing that I would like to say. The crowds out there, you're really fueling me to go on, and I appreciate that. Thanks.
The final question for me really is the show changed and had to evolve so much over the series. You would have been watching on. Were there any events that you wish you could have had a go at? Polak?
Skytrack.
Yeah.
Skytrack. I really feel that I would have been... good at Skytrack, based upon the training that I was doing at the time, that upside down kind of thing. I think I would have been good at that. And you know, one that I would have loved to have tried, because they didn't have gauntlets. Mm-hmm. In the first series, you know, and people say, why gauntlet? You know, is this like an opportunity to be bashed about by the... But I was pretty... I think I was pretty...
You'd have been great at that.
You just smashed it.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it would be Shadow at the end.
Yeah, well, you know, I felt that, you know, I'd have been... So those are the two that looking at all the other games... Yeah. Should I bring this up? Yeah, I'm going to bring it up because, yeah, I would feel that, you know, an opportunity. But if you remember, I was actually at the Champions of Champions show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think for me, what it was I found out about the Champions of Champions show through another contender. I never knew anything about it. And I think what it was, you know, if there's a regret that I was not asked to take part in the Champions of Champions show. And
I'm surprised.
Everything around that was, it made me feel that, you know, it was, how would I say, more about, I don't know, maybe ratings with you know, bringing that back at that particular time. And then also, I think not being asked and then actually calling up ITV and asking them what is that about. But and yeah, because I have the opportunity, I'll just say exactly, because like you've got positives, you've got negatives.
Absolutely.
So I called up ITV and I said, well, what is, I understand that you're having a Champions and Champions show. I said, I've not even been called. So the statement was, we didn't think that you were still involved in activity or whatever it may be, blah blah blah. Yeah, so that was the statement. So I said, well, I'm still very active.
I still
do me training and stuff like that. So I think I didn't get a positive then I got a call back and they said, yes, we'd like to invite you, but you'd be the reserve champion to the reserve.
What?
No, I'm telling you facts.
You should have been there.
Right, so I would be the reserve champion to the reserve. Yeah. And I think the sad thing about it, I went down there, but what happened, one of the champions got injured. So the reserve went in. Yep. So what does, so I'm asking you now. So what does that make me?
Producer Paul.
Could be the reserve.
Thank you.
Producer Paul.
And thank you. So I was told that if the reserve champion got injured, they would take someone else that had got knocked out of the actual screening of the show and they'd put him in. That told me. So I said, you know what? Let me, can I just say something to you? I said, because I went down there with my wife and my daughter. I said, you know what? Thank you. And I left. I just left. So I didn't even know how the final went or anything like that. Because it put a very sour taste. It left me, you know, because then it was about people's preferences. It wasn't about bringing to the public the champions, the true champions. It was about, because I know at that time they was actually trying to get Two Scoops, but Two Scoops was in prison for, I can't remember exactly, but they couldn't get Two Scoops. Yeah. So for me, I was just like, you know, it's now turned into, we're going to put on camera who we feel.
Yeah.
There's politics behind everything.
And so that for me, you know, because now saying it, the only reason why I'm saying it is because I'm like, oh yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is exactly what a podcast is for.
Yeah, yeah.
We've looked at the positives and there's also a negative.
Absolutely. But it doesn't, I feel that I had to give like a level of balance, because I don't want to make it seem like, oh yeah, it was all honky-dory and things like that. I'm just saying the tail end. Where if you're putting on a Champions and Champions show, to give,
you champion know, should be there.
The champions to be there.
Contender, ready!
Weininger may shake his head, but there's no going back. There's a big angry gladiator with a pewter stick 16 inches away on the other platform.
We feel so privileged. You possess something I see rarely in people, and it's grace. That gratitude and grace, and you are pure class. For me, the champion of champions, and we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you.
So there we have it, the first male contender champion, which I have to say is probably a bit more of a mouthful than I thought when we started this journey of discovery of gladiators. Weininger Erwin, what an absolute pleasure it was. And I think for a lot of you GLAD fans listening, I think it will probably have sort of just whet your appetite a bit of what we can get and what we expect from other sort of champion contenders as well. But his story, what he went through, and remember, he was the first series, so he didn't necessarily know what to expect, but the platform that he got from being on the show, I loved the non-gladiatorial stuff that we actually spoke to him this time and all the different things he's gone on to do.
I've taught fitness for 30, like most of the ex-gladiators and the contenders. We all kind of remained in the health and fitness industry in some way, shape or form, whether it's doing spinal work, Pilates, top end hits or aerobic dance fitness. But what he's done is he's brought fitness back to his community, the whole and the Caribbean feel of movement and dance and getting whole communities from young to old, and he's doing it on a regular basis and having these gorgeous tea parties. I can just picture him and his family and all the good, the bonhomie that they will constantly have when they do these classes and these tea parties. I just think he's just lovely that he keeps that love of dance and movement completely going through every single week of his life to this day. What an inspiration.
Yeah, huge inspiration. And for me, as I said at the start, to have him to look up to as kind of that person between myself and the gladiators, these superhumans. You've got someone here who's taken on the gladiators, and he's actually, out of all the people, out of all the Davids that kind of tried to take on Goliath, he was the one that actually got up that travelator and went through the paper to become the first male champion. But the thing that really struck me from his story was he almost didn't get on gladiators in the first place because of the treadmill. And that is a thing with these tryouts that you had. If you weren't used to, there was nothing before, you wouldn't have known what to necessarily to expect. So the treadmill story was fantastic in that he didn't know he could speed it up.
I know. I mean, I think it was in the very early days of the contender tryouts, it was fairly archaic. And I think a lot of people, you know, if they'd come from an athletic background, they may not necessarily have ever been exposed to technical gym equipment in any way. But we got him when we got him in the end, and he literally through the whole of the rest of the whole of the years that then went on, he became one of the iconic contenders because of his journey to simply become a contender and one of the most memorable.
And I think the thing that I've taken from a lot of the gladiator interviews we've had has been how determined and driven that they all were, not only to get to this to the level that they're at before joining gladiators in their respective fields, but when you look at Weininger, you know, he got off that treadmill and was told, sorry, you know, you haven't quite made the time. Then most people, I think, would have just stepped away and gone, okay, I missed my chance. I can't believe I didn't know how to go on a treadmill, kind of thing. But he actually went up to the producer and said, look, this is the situation, give me another chance. And I'm not sure, I know you see it sometimes on like X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, whatever, sometimes Simon Cowell, you know, you give him a good sob story and he let you have another chance. But you know, I'm really surprised that he got given another chance, and then from going, they must have seen something in him to give him that other chance, surely.
I cannot almost just picture Nigel Lithgow's face, to be honest. I remember, as not an indictment, he just would have this very stern look about the contenders because he wanted them to be elite. He wanted them to come in and be gutsy and fearless, because that's what we'd have needed from them in the arena. And I can just imagine what Nigel's face would have been like when he'd have gone back to persist and say, give me another chance. Because eventually that stern look that Nigel has would have melted inside, because he was commented on at one point about Nigel Lithgow presides over the gladiatorial arena Caesar-like. And he did. But once you got under his skin, he had a soft spot for you, and you had to earn it. You really had to earn it with Nigel Lithgow. Then you would have been fine. And that's exactly what he did, what Weininger did. So I'm particularly proud of how he shared that with us as well.
However, one way to really annoy Nigel Lithgow would be to arrive 4 hours early for your show.
Yeah, that's a little keen, a little pre. The arena, the NIA, had lots of sort of big back doors that would open for these huge rigs and sets that, you know, people doing concerts and doing huge big venues would need these kind of the where the props and all, you know, the things like the wall and all our events were stored. It's a huge area, but we'd often have the doors open when we weren't filming, just for some air and some light, because it's pitch black back there. And I can just picture him kind of mooning around when there was only literally, I think, Nigel backstage and Shadow beating each other up with pugil sticks. That's exactly what was going on. And Nigel going, you're too early, go away. And he's like, no, I'm going to stay. today and I'm going to watch this. But he must have had the fear of God in him at one point, though, watching Shadow and Nigel beating each other up with the pugil stick. I do remember that, actually.
And I think with the contenders, I think it was a completely different chat this week because there's different questions. Everyone's had a different journey to getting there, especially him as well. And it's kind of got me looking forward to other contenders that we can speak to as well.
Yeah, me too. I don't even know where we'll start, but producer Paul, I'm pretty sure we'll have a nice list waiting for us, and it would just be amazing just to hear and see how their lives have gone on since then. I know that I have a client, actually. I do coaching and psychotherapy, as you know, and he's a tennis pro coach. And one of the neighbours near where he lives up in the North London area is one of our contenders who actually went on to marry another one of the contenders, and they have a contender baby. And I will reveal more about that to you and everybody when we can actually firm up a date and speak to Mark Mottram.
Oh, that would be really good as well, because we've had like gladiator babies and we've spoken about that.
Yeah.
So that I think that would be really good as well. But we'd love to hear the contenders that you would like to hear from. So if you want to get in touch with us and also tell us about the show and your own glad stories, the email is thegladpod@gmail.com.
And of course, you can get us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram @thegladpod.
And once again, as always, and I love saying this bit on the show because I know the show's now closing, but we've still got one little bit left. And that is, of course, John Sachs.
Good competition, good spirit, great sportsmanship as both contenders show mutual respect. Join us again next week for the ultimate challenge, the Might of...